Good morning, everyone. Thank you. My name is Rod Elliott. I'm a director with Global Public Affairs in our Toronto office. Before I turn it over to Carrie, who's going to moderate our breakfast, I just wanted to take an opportunity to welcome you to our Global Public Affairs Insight Breakfast Forum. For some of you who have attended our breakfast in the past, our Insight Breakfast, we try and present our clients and stakeholders with public policy issues that are ahead of the curve. Our forum today is, I think, certainly an opportunity for us to hear from some big thinkers who are shaping the debate around Bill 72, the Water Opportunities and Water Conservation Act. For those of you who are tracking the bill, Bill 72, it received first reading on May 18th of this year. The Ministry of the Environment is currently in a 60-day period to review comments on the new legislation. Would expect that that bill will receive some committee time after it gets second reading in the fall. I know from my perspective, I'm particularly interested to hear today some of the panelists and their ideas for the Water Technology Acceleration Project, which is promised in the bill, and I think that will be part of a good discussion we'll get today. Global Public Affairs, we're a national government relations firm. We have 40 professionals across Canada, based in Toronto, Ottawa, and Calgary. I have some colleagues joining me today, Randy Pettipaw, who is president of Global Public Affairs, Andrew Bowles, one of our senior consultants, Elizabeth Wagden, who put on this event for us, who was our organizer. Irie Jones is one of our senior associates. She's also the former chair of Watershed Committee for the for Toronto Region Conservation Authority. And finally, some of you may know our colleague Monica Masciantonio, who is not here today. She's currently on her honeymoon in Italy. So that's part of our work-life balance at Global. We let people go on their honeymoons. I'm going to turn it over to Carrie, who is going to Carrie's the editor of Water Canada magazine. She's going to lead our panelists in our discussion and Q&A. So, on behalf of Global Public Affairs, I'll turn it over to Carrie, and thank you for attending.
Good morning and welcome. I'd like to add Happy Oceans Day to that greeting, but the ongoing oily cloud down in the Gulf of Mexico kind of prevents me using that adjective. Oil aside, many people are wondering how we can turn our vast water issues, which are becoming ubiquitous in our media and even our daily discussions, into opportunities. And they're really starting to comprehend the value of water and the costs associated with its management and how we can turn homegrown technology into worldwide solutions. So today we're here to talk about the proposed Water Opportunities and Water Conservation Act. We'll be focusing mainly on the first section of the Act, which suggests making Ontario the North American leader in developing and selling new technologies for water conservation and treatment at home and worldwide. We have some great panelists here to speak on the topic. So after I briefly introduce each person, I'd like to invite each of them to tell you a little bit about their organizations and their perspectives on Ontario's opportunity. To my left, we have a top 40 under 40 recipient of David Henderson, who is the managing director of XPV Capital Corporation. Angela Hughes, CEO and director of Exogen Technologies Incorporated, and Kevin Jones, president and CEO of OCEDA. So David, maybe you'd like to tell us a little bit about XPV.
Thanks, Carrie. XPV is a unique fund. We are a private equity fund that focuses on investing in water technology. So we pretty well invest in everything other than the projects themselves. So we don't fund actual infrastructure projects, but we invest in everything in between. And that's our sole focus. And we're excited and pleased to be here today.
I'm Angela Hughes, President and CEO of Exogen Technologies. We are developing an innovative technology here in Ontario for treating municipal and industrial raw wastewater. And we will have our first demonstration plant at the town of Orangeville Water Pollution Control Plant this summer. And we've received funding from every level of government. And we're always looking for funding from new sources. So.
Good morning. I'm Kevin Jones from OCETA, which is the Ontario Centre for Environmental Technology Advancement. We've been around for over 15 years. We support both the supply side in terms of working with technology developers to help bring their innovations to market. We also work very closely on the demand side to determine what are the market needs, customer needs to accelerate the deployment and market adoption of clean technologies, including water technologies, as well as environmental sustainable solutions.
Great, so we'll get the ball rolling with a couple of questions, and after that open up the floor to your questions. Even though we'll be speaking mostly about the business and technology aspects of this act, you're welcome to ask questions about conservation sections of the bill. So firstly, the Ontario government is positioning us as the province becoming a major force in the global market, and I wanted to ask if you think that we're well positioned to enter this market with powerful leaders such as Israel and Singapore already in the running. Are we going to be able to compete, and which of our water technology niches will be most successful? What does the world need from Ontario?
So we're very familiar with Israel and Singapore and some of the other technology clusters that are out there. I actually think Ontario is well positioned for a number of reasons. One, you know, location to the U.S. is going to be very important. You know, Israel and Singapore develop great technologies, but we deal with this on a daily basis. Like, we're in due diligence with an Israeli company right now, and one of the things that the Israeli company needs to do is it needs to come find a market. And so obviously I'm partly trying to convince them that they should set up their operations in Ontario for numerous reasons, and this is why I think we can compete. And so number one is access to talent. There's a great foundation of water talent in the province of Ontario, and that's because we've had probably one of the toughest things to do in developing any technology cluster, and that's if you've had some big winners, whether it's Trojan or Xenon, companies like that. You have a spin-off cycle effect that comes from that. You know, there's a couple thousand, you know, engineers that were there early days and helped grow that company, and they're now out and available. So I think access to talent, and again, companies from Israel and Singapore that want to come to access the U.S. market are going to want to access stuff like that or access that kind of talent. So, and I think the second one is, you know, if you look at Ontario in terms of where we need to go as a province, you look at its infrastructure deficit and some of the other things that we need to do, innovation is going to be paramount to that as well. So I think there's, by looking at alternative technologies and innovative ways of addressing, you know, the infrastructure deficit and some of the other issues that Ontario faces, is also going to be a good driver for and a good platform which will attract the Exogens and other companies to help solve some of those issues. So I think we are very well positioned, in particular on the talent side and access to the U.S. market. A lot of people don't realize the U.S. market is the largest water market in the world, and it's the largest by a substantial factor. They, you know, there's different estimates, but it's anywhere between 30% to 40% of the world's water market, and I think that's a pretty attractive value proposition for companies.
Just to add to that as well, in terms of other strengths we do have, obviously Ontario is a very strong academic research strength in terms of a number of universities. There's literally probably 19 universities who are involved in various aspects of water research. There's other organizations as well in the province of Ontario which are there to essentially support companies and bringing technologies to market. The province of Ontario has announced what they call the Ontario Network of Excellence. And again, there's a variety of organizations such as MARS, such as the Ontario Centers of Excellence, who provide a range of business technical support services. There's also a variety of funding available, I think combination of both private and public. Obviously, David XBV Capital is a leader in terms of venture capital side, but we also have a range of other VCs. There's Emerald, there's angel investors. On the public side, we have STTC, who has a mandate around water, could be there in terms of demonstrating innovative water technologies. And we also have various provincial funds as well in terms of Innovation Demonstration Fund, the Investment Accelerator Fund. So again, there's many elements in the foundation that are already there in place, which can make Ontario clearly a North American leader and eventually a global leader. And I think the other piece, which we're talking about today, Carrie, obviously, is the new water tap, which to me is sort of the glue that's going to bind these things together.
Well, I thought David was going to be controversial, but I guess it's up to me now. Singapore and Israel, I think, have become recognized for water excellence because they have the need to do so. They are water-stressed countries, and that's not the case for us. So we are, I think, have to walk the talk. So if we're going to be innovators in water technology and the use of it, we have to be doing that ourselves. Mm-hmm. And one way that that can help Canadian or Ontario companies is that if there's incentives for our technologies to actually be used to accomplish that.
So, I mean, we should add that in both Israel and Singapore, there is incentive. So, like, they obviously have a scarcity need, which drives the underlying foundation for that market. But, like, New Tech, which is the Israeli, and the Water Hub, which is Singapore, all have programs and incentives. It isn't just the scarcity need. The government had to do things to incentivize industry to, and it's really industry that they're focused on. A great example is Singapore. I mean, if you think about Singapore, it's a small island country, city-state, but it's very export-driven. So it's very much like Ontario. And so when they introduced, for instance, full-cost water pricing, they also introduced incentives to help companies bring technology in so that, you know, the value proposition made sense. So you can move to full cost, but, hey, we can help you adopt technologies that will help you manage those costs and manage the water. And that's really what drove Singapore to be probably one of the top recycling or water reuse hubs in the world. So I think I would agree, you know, in terms of being, I don't know if it's controversial or not, but certainly if you, I think any jurisdiction that wants to stimulate any kind of cluster, even though the underlying drivers might be different. And I would argue, actually, in Ontario and in Canada, we do have a water issue, okay? And if you look at the industries which drive this country, they're the most water-intensive industries in the world. And so, and we found a strange phenomenon, and that is when we did all our research, we found only two types of regions in the world that produced amazing water technology. And interestingly enough, it was regions that have no water, so Israel and Singapore and certain parts of Europe and Australia, places like that. The other regions are regions that have way too much water. And the reason, you know, and at first it doesn't make you sort of say, well, they have so much water, why do they drive technology? Well, it's like Canada. When you have too much water, you tend to attract the water-intensive industries. And when in the 70s and 80s came about and we introduced the Water Acts, those were the real first industries that got hit pretty hard on water quality, water efficiency. So that was the first wave of innovation. It's why, you know, xenon got into membranes and things like that. So I think there is a driver here. But I also think there's a much bigger driver for every jurisdiction, in particular water. I mean, there's some amazing stats that Booz Allen did when they did their study. You know, $21 trillion is the global water deficit when you add up, you know, between 2005 and 2025. $21 trillion. To put it in perspective, okay, if you add up all the other infrastructure, okay, they analyzed power, ports, airports, it was $18 trillion. That was all other infrastructure combined. And the reason for that is what we did with water, and Ontario is no different, but most jurisdictions that put infrastructure in the ground, they put it in the ground and then just forgot about it, right? Set and forget it. And the way we learn about leaks traditionally and all the rest of that is when the big pothole ends up in the middle of your road, that's when you know you have a leak. And so I think there's going to be an underlying driver for a lot of jurisdictions to be looking at innovative things. And I think the one silver lining of the 2008 financial crisis, if you can think of a silver lining from that period, is, you know, it's also taken away the ability for government, and I'm not just really picking on Ontario here, I'm talking, focusing like on the U.S., for instance, to subsidize water infrastructure, burying it in, you know, taxes or flow-through bonds and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's going to bring about, you know, transparency in what does it truly cost to deliver that clean water to your tap. And I think that's going to be, I think there's going to be some eye-opening moments for a lot of us when you start to see the true cost to move water out of a lake, you know, into a treatment system, into a distribution system, and then come out your tap. The energy, the chemicals, the labor, the things, all the things that go into there that have sort of been buried in other, you know, taxes or other mechanisms. And I think that's going to become probably the biggest driver of innovation and technology and water. And that is, you know, how do we control these costs? How do we get a handle on these deficits? So I think there is going to be some interesting drivers. And Ontario is no different here. So I sort of say, like, you know, the world's moving to this. We have a platform. Let's invest in it.
Angela, I'm interested in your case in particular. as an emerging technology and trying to put yourself into get yourself eventually into going public. What are some of the major financial and implementation barriers that you've come across? And on a broader scope, maybe for the both of you gentlemen to answer as well, what are we looking at in Ontario in the entire climate of Ontario and worldwide as well?
So our technology development's been funded by private equity, which is very difficult to obtain, and since the financial crisis, it's been almost impossible. And many sources of government funding, both federal and the Ontario government. And I know this is probably hard to believe, but that money proved to be the easier money to get, even though the process of getting it is very onerous, especially for a small company. So that is probably the single most challenging thing for us is funding the technology through to commercialization. And one of the challenges I also found presenting to angel investors who were also being presented to by software developers whose time to market is, you know, from concept to in the package on the shelf is probably 18 months. Well, when you're talking about developing an infrastructure technology, that cycle is maybe 5-10 years. And investors don't want to hear that kind of payback analysis. So it's very challenging, very onerous. If government had incentives for private investors, like tax credits or what have you, that would probably have helped us quite a bit. But those things don't exist for this sector yet.
Again, in general, all the clients that we have, whether it's in water or any sort of clean technology, they all face the same issue around financing. In terms of any client that comes meet us, the first question we ask is, what are your major challenges? And every single time it's financing, financing, financing. So it clearly is an issue. And again, it's a question of what can be done to actually streamline that. I guess back to the financial ecosystem. We talk about business ecosystems. I think there's also a financial ecosystem. And how can we strengthen, coordinate, and improve basically all the steps a company needs to go through in terms of initial idea to development, to testing, to actually demonstration, deployment, market adoption, and market growth. That's all part of an ecosystem a company has to go through, and each player has a key role to play, whether it's an angel investor, whether it's a VC, whether it's a bank, whether it's pension funds, who are now looking at getting into the game as well. So to me, it's how do we actually coordinate that? How do we go from step to step? How do we do the handoffs between different financial investments that can actually help a company accelerate bringing technology to market?
So that's a good segue into the next question. The Act also proposes the creation of the Water Technologies Acceleration Project, or WaterTAP, good name, to assist in facilitating the growth of globally competitive companies and high-value jobs in the water and wastewater sector. So how do you envision this hub? What would be helpful?
How much time do we have?
Oh, quite a lot.
I'm very excited about WaterTAP in terms of the technology acceleration project's been proposed by the province of Ontario. I think it's a great idea. I think it's needed. As I mentioned earlier, in terms of, to me, it's going to be essentially the glue that can bring all of our strengths together and address some of the gaps. I do want to mention a couple key things. One is, I do think, again, the government's going to be establishing WaterTAP. Government cannot do it alone. Industry has to be there. I think WaterTAP has to reflect, what are the needs of the market? What are the issues in the market? What are the pain points in the market? Has to be industry-led. We need private industry on that WaterTAP to actually drive it along with government. There has to be an alignment and a shared responsibility there between government and industry. A couple of the key points would be in terms of initial things that this WaterTAP can do. I think it's very important at the beginning to actually put in place what some call a water asset map. We need much better definition and characterization of what are the assets we have in Ontario in terms of suppliers, in terms of customers, in terms of support, in terms of financing. We need a really clear indication in terms of what are the water assets we have, which can become a key foundational document in terms of moving forward with WaterTAP.
So I would echo certainly Kevin's views. I look at the, coming back to the issue of financing and some of the big challenges. We recently have raised a pretty substantial fund in the last year, and fundraising was just as challenging for us as it was for you, so you'd be happy to know. But looking back, and we were successful, and I think one of the reasons why we're successful is we were focused. And so I think the Water Opportunities Act and things like WaterTap gives Ontario a very unique opportunity because they're going to focus. And by focusing, you can then put the resources in place to sit there and go piece by piece to analyze what we need to do to move the pieces around the board so that we're going to be successful. And you can start at the beginning by saying, okay, so what are the areas of our strengths? So you're looking at an asset map and doing some different things to understand, where are our true strengths, where are our weaknesses. You can talk to the different stakeholders because you know who they are because you're focused on water. And then you can look at the financing gap. So if you do want to bring in incentives like an angel tax credit or something like that, you can link that to the program. You can then look at your university and research base and say, okay, what are we doing in the research areas and where does it make sense to industry and the sector? Both, and I think you got to look at both municipal and industry on that one. Like, how do we help municipality and urban water management get stronger? At the same time, how do we look at the big industries in Ontario and help them become more efficient around water? So you can go through that step, and then you can say to yourself, okay, what kind of demonstration facilities do we need? Okay, so now we understand what those issues are, what kind of demonstration, what kind of capabilities do we need so that when these new companies like Exogen come into play, they don't have to go through the curve that you had to go through because you were doing it on your own to get that technology to a pilot demonstration stage. Because I got to tell you, that is probably one of the most critical and would be one of the biggest competitive advantages for Ontario if we get the demonstration piece right. Because in water, it's a highly engineered solution. Therefore, your customers, who eventually are hopefully going to come and buy lots of Exogen systems, they're going to want to come and look at the system and look at the wastewater that comes out of there and make sure it's clean. And if you're producing energy, make sure, okay, I want to see how much energy. They need to see results. Like my partner, John, who is one of the early or co-founders of Xenon, used to tell us a story about, Collingwood. That demonstration plant they built in Collingwood changed the company overnight. Well, not overnight, but it took some time. But it was the catalyst in the growth of Xenon. And why is that? And I couldn't believe this number, so the Ontario government may want to plug their ears because they're probably going to want to send Xenon a bill, but they had 200, on average, 200 international visitors go to that facility a year. And they would fly in from all over the world, go up to that facility, and they would see it running, the membranes, all that kind of stuff, clean water coming out of there. And then that's what got the, hey, wow, check mark, right? And next thing you know, you look at, you look at when Collingwood went in. I wish we all knew this when it was a public company. If we knew that, when Collingwood goes in, what was going to happen to that company? And I think that is going to be critical for Ontario. So we get the demonstration part right, and then we do have some of the follow-on mechanisms. There is XBVs and Emeralds. There is other sources of capital out there. So I think it's an alignment that, really it's going to be important. I think WaterTap is an important piece to that because I think you need a way of bringing in the different stakeholders to move away from the selfish or the bias of self-interest that, every stakeholder group has. And I think the WaterTap could be a very interesting mechanism to sort of eliminate some of that, to give the government some good advice and how we align all those different groups. But I think it all comes back to focus. Our advantage is the government has said, we're going to pick green energy, we're going to pick water, and I think digital media is one of the other areas, and let's now align our resources, because that's the next step. And I think if we do that, we can compete, and we can be create a platform here and be world leaders in those areas.
And we'll have a demonstration plant for everyone to come
see. There you go. would you agree, though, that the demonstration piece, for everything from getting that next investor, right, to probably most important is getting that next customer. And I don't know if anyone's here from is it Orangeville, right, that did it? Or which was the city that's doing it?
Orangeville.
I mean, hats off to Orangeville, right? I mean, to, take that and look at. And actually, in particular in an area where, you know, one of the questions earlier was, where can we be strong? Wastewater management is an area we can be strong. If you look at the technology that's needed to deal with wastewater, and it's really extracting the value from wastewater, I think we should change it from, we should be like Singapore, let's change it to new water. That's what they call their wastewater. It's called new water. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, wastewater has the wrong connotation, right? It's like, it's waste. It's not. There's incredible value in wastewater streams. And all different kind of wastewater streams, whether you got high organics or you got, you know, certain, you know, one of the cool companies that we've seen recently, other than NextGen, NextGen's very cool, is, you know, it takes high organic wastewater and takes the high organics and turns it into a polymer that has the same properties of plastic, and then you can inject that polymer into plastic molding, like existing equipment, and create bottles and all sorts of stuff. Pretty amazing stuff. And that, you know, again, coming from a wastewater stream, and you get the double win, right? Because you're cleaning up the water, and at the same time, you're extracting value. So I think if I was to say one area where we could be strong, that could be definitely one of the areas where Ontario can lead. I think the other area, which ties to a bit to the conservation side, because I think there's also opportunity on that side, is in water reuse, for instance. You know, water reuse is going to be one of the most powerful water conservation techniques out there, because what it allows you to do is actually, you know, you don't necessarily have to reduce the water in a process. You just have to learn how to recycle that water more efficiently. And there's big studies coming out now, in particular the U.S. and other places, where it shows that, you know, it can save a factor of five in terms of the water that you're withdrawing from your wetlands or your whatever your water source is, just by recycling it within the system. Never mind the energy costs that it costs to pump the water to, you know, the saving on pumping and all the other benefits that come in it. So I think those would be two areas that I think could be very interesting for Ontario.
Yes, and we've been approached by industrial emitters for that. Exactly. Can you treat the water for reuse?
Absolutely.
And actually, there's a lot of mines that are actually shut down for water contamination. Yeah. So in order to reopen those mines, they have to clean up the water and reuse it.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point, because just think again. Think of our industries: mining, agriculture, food and beverage, pharmaceutical. These are all water-intensive industries. You know, and I think, again, if we do it right, and you think of, you know, oxygen and other systems, like, we can help treat your wastewater, but more importantly, we can help also produce energy, which can then go into making your process more efficient, right? And that can also happen on a municipal scale. It can happen on an industrial scale. But again, I think a lot of it comes back to, I think one of the keys is demonstration. I think that is going to be a big one. Certainly one of the things I've echoed to Brenda and many others many, many times is, you know, that's one area. And again, I think the government is listening, and, you know, I think it's very encouraging.
The other key thing on demonstration is to add to that as well is that one of the barriers that many companies face, like Exergen, is trying to find or make that first sale. And again, what we hear time and time again is that companies are trying to sell, for example, their product or solution, U.S. or globally. The first question they're going to be asked by a potential buyer is, what are your domestic sales like? If the answer is zero, the chances of that company actually being able to make that sale go down considerably or not at all. So this gets back to the demonstration as well, in terms that we can set up what I would call a buyer network across the province that includes municipalities, that includes rural or remote areas, that includes First Nations, that includes our industry, pulp and paper, mining, forestry, but also includes our Ontario government. Our Ontario government does have a program called Green Fit, not the feed and tariff, but the green focused on innovation and technology, whereby government is, in fact, want to be a first customer, early adopter for these kinds of solutions. If we can coordinate a large-scale buyer demonstration-type network across Ontario, then we can create a win-win across the board. One is we're providing customers for our innovators, which is key. They can now use that to sell globally. The other one is, which we always tend to lose sight of, is that we can make all of our operations facilities much more cost-efficient in terms of operating cost savings, capital cost savings. We can also obviously reduce the environmental footprint. And also looking at, from an energy-water nexus, reducing energy consumption across the province as well. So I would echo David's comments in terms of, I think the whole demonstration, a coordinated, aligned demonstration program across the entire province, including industry, municipal, commercial, industrial, and agricultural, would be a huge benefit and a major focus of WaterTap.
I mean, and I want to make sure we don't leave the municipal angle on this, because it's a very important one. And I was just down in London, and we were talking about the southwestern region, and particularly around London. And, you know, they have, you know, obviously they're going to be spending some money in wastewater in different areas. And it was a very interesting discussion we had because, you know, even if you think municipally, think of the benefits of being a little bit out of the box, okay? In other words, you know, if you're going to build a wastewater treatment facility, which probably most municipalities are going to have to spend money on over the next 5-10 years, right? All it really requires is to put some thinking up front in, okay, you know, what innovation, what sort of things can we bring into this equation that A, is going to save me money, okay? So, because that's very important for all municipalities, not just Ontario, but, you know, around North America and the world. More importantly, you know, also ensure that I get clean water, or it does you get the output that you're looking for. But also by building demonstration into it. So in other words, it can be simple things as side streams in the unit process, become a testing and demonstration region for that kind of technology, you're going to attract companies. You will attract the Israeli company that's looking to relocate to North America, because relocation companies usually relocate beside their first customers. Why? Because you're building something and they want to be very close and all the rest of it. And then you can ask yourself, okay, so we're going to attract jobs and interesting things into my region. You know, okay, then what's my local university? What's my local college doing? And what can we be doing to partner with them? So I think it's not just industry, but I also think there's a real opportunity for the municipalities to think a little out of the box. But again, without, you know, I don't think you have to cross lines in terms of safety or anything like that. I think it's a real opportunity to do things a little differently, because frankly, the way we built systems in the 20th century will not work for the 21st century. Climate change and all these issues that we're going to have to deal with, I don't think the 30-year wastewater plant type hub and spoke is going to be the answer. I think we need to look for innovative ways to deal with these issues, and I think the future is going to be more around distributed systems, more around bringing in the exogens, you know, how do we harvest the value and energy out of these systems. And again, coming back to, you know, a big challenge we all face, and, you know, and we don't just face this in water, it's in healthcare and everything, is we got some rising costs here and some pretty big deficits, in particular in water. And I think, I don't know how we're going to fund this without looking at different ways of doing this. And so I think there's just big wins all around for doing this, both industrial and municipally.
Yeah, we visited the city of Seattle, and one question they asked us, could your technology be put at pumping stations? So what they have are these stations all over the city. Toronto probably has them where they pump to a centralized plant, but they want to get rid of the pipes, so they want to, instead of digging up the roads, put the wastewater treatment closer to where it's being generated.
And how important was it for the city of Seattle if you had your pilot up and running and they could come to a facility in Ontario and look at it? What are the odds of you winning something in that in Seattle? Goes, I mean, that's a great example of why we should support this program, right? Because there's lots of companies like Exogen in Ontario today that are going out and talking to cities in the south, well, I guess not south, it's western U.S., but the southwest that has huge scarcity issues. These questions asked, and again, I come back to that demonstration. It's a great, you know, example. The opportunities are there. It's just, and again, I think it's going to come down to regions that figure this out and focus are going to win.
And we may move on to some audience questions now. If anybody has a question, I'll come around with the mic.
Todd Latham with Water Canada Magazine. We haven't talked about public-private partnerships. Canadian, the CCPIB has invested millions of dollars in Anglican Water, which is the UK private sector delivery and utility in England. Why would our national pension fund not invest in Canadian Water, and specifically in P3s?
Well, I think that that would be under a build-own-operate scenario, and I think that that is just starting to be looked at as an alternative in Canada and the U.S., which is mostly public. And that's because of the scarcity of capital for capital investment. But there are a few around. There's up in Cottage Country, there's a developer who wanted to build a development, and he had to put in the wastewater treatment plant. There's another one just like that on the outskirts of Orangeville. So where either municipalities don't have the existing capacity to expand, then they're putting the pressure on the developer. So I think that's coming. It's just the exception more than the rule here. But the UK is an excellent example. They have great financial information available on the web. It's done on long-term contracts where the user is charged on a per cubic meter basis. But I think that'll get back to what David talks about, that you have to pay the true cost of getting that water to your tap for those partnerships to work. So that's probably the direction we're headed in.
Yeah, I don't know how exactly it unfolded. I'm not part of the CPP, so I don't know their strategy. But I think part of the challenge in Canada today and in Ontario is just the expertise around that area is just developing. And so it's going to take some time because it is a very private partner, private-public partnerships are, you know, are very complex, and, you know, you're dealing with a lot of different risks. And so it's going to take some, I think, take some time and energy to figure some of that stuff out. But I simply look at, again, you look at the infrastructure deficit, and you look at things like healthcare costs becoming 70 cents of, you know, every tax dollar. That's going to drive us into at least the private delivery of water. I don't think we'll ever, you know, I'm not even sure I'd be in favor of privatizing water itself. I mean, I think it's an essential good for everybody, right? But I can certainly see the privatization of the delivery of the water and you know, the stuff in between. And there is some interesting, I won't name the city that's talking about this because I don't want to bring it up, but I've had some interesting discussions with some different municipalities in Ontario that are, you know, looking at alternatives. And one of them is they're thinking through, okay, can we take water reuse, for instance, and build a water reuse facility in a centralized industrial area to recycle a lot of water, you know, and there's some challenging water there they want to recycle. But interestingly, the net gain, so in other words, the withdrawals that you're dropping on the on your withdrawals, right, on the wetlands and the aquifer, you know, they're thinking, okay, well, can then we go to a developer then and say, look, you know, you want to develop, we've just created a net gain in water. You need a water plan to build your development. Well, why don't you pay for that gain? So in other words, you know, we'll give that allocation over to you, and it's a win-win, and that help pays for the reuse facility. So I think there is going to be some interesting, you know, and I think, okay, that's, you know, that's pretty innovative thinking, right? It's bringing together the different pieces. The developer's happy because they get the ability to develop the land they want. The industry is happy because, you know, they're getting a reuse facility to recycle their water. The environmental community is happy because, you know, they're recycling the water and treating that water properly. So it's a win-win. And I think we're in a sort of a unique time where we can do some of these things. So I think there is going to be definitely private sector involvement. How exactly it unfolds, I think that will take some time to see. But I just don't see where how else we're going to overcome some of these financial issues without it.
I agree. I think you have to explore, you know, what options are available in terms of financing infrastructure improvements. I think drilling it down, though, in terms of, I always like to go back to examples, and I think the examples are going to be more on a municipality basis. But again, looking at certain sectors, so the food and beverage sector is one of my favorite sectors in Ontario. Many don't realize it's likely number one or number two in terms of an industrial sector, $34 billion annually in sales, 110,000 employees. Very important to the provincial economy, but he got examples there in terms of a typical food and beverage company is going to rely upon a municipality for their water supply, is going to rely upon a municipality in terms of discharge of the refluent for treatment at a wastewater facility. And obviously getting back to the issues of financing, infrastructure deficit, et cetera, there's got to be a way, in my mind, in terms of municipalities partnering with these kinds of companies to look at how do we address these things right back at the source. So again, is it better for a company to look at how can we reuse, recycle our water, look at closed-loop systems, look at the ability that no wastewater effluent is leaving our plant, therefore that frees some infrastructure in terms of municipality, allows them to expand, for example, in other areas, but also looks at innovation in terms of at a plant level. And there may be some opportunities for even there a municipality private company financing model that will allow that company, again, to reduce their water intake from municipality, but also to reduce or eliminate their effluent discharge municipality. So again, that's an example at a very local level.
Thank you.
Hi, Lee Hennecke, Foresight Consulting, and former Xenon sales manager. So I liked another plug for Xenon, even though they don't really exist anymore. It's part of GE. Anyways, I like the comments about, you know, we're moving away from hub and spoke models as well, industry, you know, taking a role. In my experience in other jurisdictions across North America, there's two main drivers for innovations in wastewater treatment. One was rates, municipal rates, decrease in service fees or decrease in development charges. And the second was environment and increased environmental regulations, which caused you know, people to move towards reuse or better treatment. So what can this Water Act do in terms of increasing the dialogue, you know, with municipalities so they're coming up with rates that are will encourage whether it be residential or commercial developers to put in their own on-site systems? And also, you know, what dialogue can take place between, you know, I guess different ministries within the province so that environmental regulations are increasing the demand for these two technologies?
Usually they all look at me when they get the tricky question, the old price question. So I think, okay, so first of all, I've been involved in some of the dialogues around the Act, and there is actually a lot of dialogue going on between the different ministries, so that I find very encouraging, because one of the things Kevin and I wrote into the report that we put together is, and again, you look at other jurisdictions that have done really well, like, you know, Israel and Singapore, there's a lot of interministerial cooperation, because water touches many different aspects. I mean, you can look at it on the health side, the environmental side, the economic development, you know, infrastructure. So I would wholeheartedly agree. And so far, what I've seen is a lot of good dialogue between the different ministers. There's a few representatives here, they might be able to comment better on it, but certainly as an observer, I've seen that. I think the real issue around pricing in water is as much an awareness challenge as it is really a pricing mechanism challenge. And I think the one thing that's being contemplated in this Act and in part of the going forward is to make the pricing to make the cost transparent. And I think that's going to be very critical to overcoming some of the political obstacles in, you know, because frankly, you know, and if you go to the U.S., they're much more bolder when they make these statements, especially in the southern U.S. now. And like I went to a meeting, and there was nine of the sort of top agencies represented, the leaders of each agency, and the one guy, I won't say which state he was from, stood up and said, "The day of cheap water is finished." And literally, that's a very interesting statement. And frankly, I think it holds true for everyone. Like, no matter what, and this is some, I guess we need an awareness campaign or something around this, but the cost of water is going up regardless of what we do. So we get two choices, whether we want to attack the deficit, infrastructure deficit as is, and use all the old technology and build, you know, wastewater plants like we do today and all the rest of it, your cost is still going up because you have to finance it somehow. And again, municipalities and governments just don't have the financing mechanisms they used to. They don't have the balance sheets to play off these. So I look at it and say the cost is going up. Well, then for me, I sit there and say, well, it's like an opportunity cost equation. So it's like, okay, well, let's go over to the other side. Like, what can we do to ensure that we manage those costs and make it efficient and bring innovation so we can drive down energy use in water systems, drive down chemical use? And I think this is the wonderful thing about the timing of today is those things also have environmental benefits. Like, there's other benefits that come out of that that can play into this. So I think the key, though, is going to be cost transparency, like helping people understand how much that water costs to come out of Lake Ontario into a treatment plant, into the distribution network, and out of your tap, right, will be one of the keys. And I think it is something that's being thought about and considered. And I don't underestimate the challenges for municipalities and working with, you know, your local communities on this stuff. But I think part of it is that. And one of the things that we've encouraged in IBM is moving into this sector in a big way. And one of the things they're doing, which I think is really interesting, is they're trying to create data transparency. So if you understand water systems, everything has SCADA systems set up. So there's lots of data out there. The one thing we haven't done really well in the water sector is we don't connect it all, like you do, say, in telecommunications and other sectors, then into information analytics systems, right? So you can see, like, true costs and how your system is operating. It's how we optimize telecom networks and different networks like that over the last 10, 15 years. Well, you can start to do the same thing with water if you create data transparency, like how much is the aquifer really dropping every year? How much does it really cost to pump that water? How much energy is really being used in that process? And the technology exists today now to actually put the infrastructure in place to track that data. So I think it's going to come to creating some of that data transparency so that we're all working from the same data, because that's usually a lot of the arguments that people make, right? They sort of have, you know, they do their study, we do our study, and everyone's got different information. So I think if we can create some of that consistency around information and then make the general public aware that, you know, and I think the only way to do that is make it transparent. Like, I think the day has to come where everyone gets a water bill, and I know some municipalities do this day, but everyone gets a water bill, and I see how much water I used and how much water I discharged, and there's some sort of cost associated with that, right? I have to make that link. Just quick side story in the U.S., it's very interesting because they've been obviously working hard at the water reuse and these kind of issues, especially in the southern U.S. and scarcity. And I was at an interesting meeting with some utilities, and they were talking about all the different political aspects of water reuse, and they put in place these big conservation programs, which were actually quite successful. And then they discovered it drove down the revenue because they were too successful, right? And then so they're saying, you know, so it's almost like, you know, it's a bit of a dilemma, right? Because it's like, okay, I need to conserve water because we need water, but then that reduces my revenue. So, you know, and initially a lot of them did the conservation plan, and now they're trying to jack up the prices, right? And it's like, so you go to your citizen and say, hey, you know, thank you for being a great citizen and using less water. Oh, by the way, now we're going to charge more. They're actually starting to think about it the other way now. They're saying, you know, maybe the best practice is actually to increase the rates to drive conservation behavior so that you're balancing that. And politically, that might be a better route to look at some of these things. So I think there's going to be lots of debate and discussion, but to me, I think the key word there is transparency and cost, and data will be key.
I agree. The other thing as well, though, is all about changing behavior. And I think in terms of David's comments, I agree fully. But again, it's more than just price as well. And I think you have to have transparency around pricing. You have to have true cross pricing. But you also have to look at education. You got to look at awareness. You got to look at changing behavior. This, in my mind, is always about changing behavior. We work with companies for 15 years at the industrial level, for example. And there's some examples, again, to illustrate that. When you walk into a plant, the plant is currently incurring a high surcharge cost to discharge their wastewater effluent to the municipality, for example. You walk in there, and the question they ask you is, we need to find a more cost-effective way of treating our wastewater. Well, that essentially is a question that's going to lead to a capital investment of possibly X million dollars, of which you're now investing in a capital piece of equipment that requires a certain amount of flow to go into that piece of equipment to treat it. The question should have been, how can we find ways of eliminating water use? How can we find ways of reusing and recycling water use in our facility? How can we find ways of reducing the strength of our wastewater, which is primarily BOD or solids related? Once those questions are asked, you've changed the whole mentality, because now looking at managing as a resource and then treating it as a resource that's valuable within their plant. So I think a lot of it also has to do with changing behavior as well as pricing, but it has to be a combination of different approaches to address this.
So wouldn't they ask that question if they were actually paying the true cost of that water?
Well, that particular case, they were paying essentially a $600,000 surcharge to, in this case, the region of Peel. So there was a financial incentive to actually motivate them to find an alternative solution. They got that far, but again, they need to take it one step further in terms of how then do we address this problem within our operations as opposed to simply discharging a problem back to the region.
But that charge is for the discharge.
That's correct.
But what's the charge for the water use?
Well, that, I agree. It's all part of it, right, in terms of we have to make that whole area transparent in terms of water coming in has this sort of price associated with it, cost associated with it. And again, it's all part of it. But again, they have to then look at what other solutions available to us. And to me, it always comes down to asking the right questions.
Brett Banks, Industry Canada. Recently, there's been some talk in regards to the EU-Canada Free Trade Agreement, and that the EU is going to want to open up the water market in terms of Canada if they're going to allow a deal to come to fruition. So what are your thoughts on that? If I mean, it obviously kind of clashes a bit with the Water Opportunities Act and some of the subsidies that go to water companies and with municipalities. So what are your thoughts on?
So is the question, the EU free trade discussion, is they're putting water on the table? So just to be clear, we're not selling Canada's water. It's the, the delivery of it's the service of water. That
I mean, the privatization, a lot of the delivery and treatment of water.
Okay. Just want to make that clear because, you know, people get anxious when they hear we're selling Canada's water. So, you know, frankly, again, if we all believe that we're going down the path of private-public partnerships, having a competitive marketplace will only benefit the country. So having, and if you think of, having foreign capital in the market, I think that could be healthy. I don't necessarily, I think it's bad. There's lots of different groups in Canada that could also participate in that market and vice versa. And I mean, Canada's already playing in the European market in terms of investment and things like that. So I'm not too sure, again, if you're going to open up and have a sort of competitive process, I don't think we can say, okay, you're in, you're out. Now, I think it, you know, obviously needs to be carefully managed and the proper oversight. I will say, a lot of people don't appreciate, in privately owned water systems, and this is particularly true in the U.S. if you talk to the publicly traded, privately owned utilities, is the scrutiny which they come under is 10 times the scrutiny that a public utility comes under. Like when they step offside on an EPA mandate or something like that, they're the first that get hammered. And then they have this thing called a share price that if they don't treat it right. So I know a lot of people are afraid of the idea of having the private sector involved in water delivery, but there's a lot of really positive cases, as you know, and don't get me wrong, there's been issues as well out there in terms of challenges, but I think if it's done right, I think it could be healthy. So I'm not sure I would be against Veolia or Suez or some of these guys participating. There's some great water utilities here in Canada, EPCOR, and I know there's even groups like Aqua here that operate facilities. So I think there could be opportunities for local and Canadian groups as well. But I think it's going to be a reality. Again, if we're going to end up down that path and we want to find the capital to finance some of these things, then we're going to have to be open-minded to some of that foreign participation as well.
I think it will step up the pace of privatization if that happens, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
Okay. But let's be clear, it's the privatization of the delivery water, not the water itself.
I'm going to Europe.
So I'd like to thank our speakers for taking the time this morning to come in and share some thoughts with us. I'd also like to thank Global Public Affairs for inviting everyone and for inviting me to moderate the panel, National Club for providing a lovely venue, and to the audience for asking some interesting questions. There are copies of Water Canada available outside the door, and you can pick them up on your way out. Rod?
Well, we said we would get you out of here at 9 a.m., and I think we're going to achieve that goal. Just really wanted to thank our panelists, thank Water Canada Magazine, in particular Carrie, for being a wonderful partner in putting this this on. It's an interesting debate. I think it's an interesting public policy discussion, and we're going to be following the legislation as it makes its way through the public discourse, and it's going to be a real interesting opportunity for Ontario. And with that, I will thank everyone and have a wonderful week. Thank you.